So we're going to continue in the book of James tonight. So if you'd turn there to James 5. It has five chapters, and we're starting in the fifth one tonight. And if things go according to plan, remember last week we talked about making our plans, you know, and if things go according to plan, we'll have two more weeks in James. And just looking ahead, it's kind of neat how each week it's kind of a different topic. Sometimes a little review of another one, but it's spun in a different way. And I think next week we're going to talk about patience, having patience like Job. So that'll be cool. And the next week, talking about prayer. And so just some good topics in there. And so tonight we're in chapter 5. We're going to do verses 1 to 6. And just give me one second here. All right, so a couple questions. Is it wrong to have riches? Is it wrong for Christians to be rich? And is money evil? I know some of these are pretty simple questions. And have you ever felt like life is unfair? And what I mean is, like, those who do wrong are prospering and enjoying all the blessings of life, and you're trying to do what's right, and your life feels like it's falling apart, and everything's going wrong, and you can't get ahead, so why are they prospering, and why is everything difficult for me? And God knows that we feel that way sometimes. We're going to see in a little bit, David felt that way. He had questions about that, and God has answers for us. That's what this passage is really about. Let's just jump in and read. We're going to do verses 1 to 6 in James 5. And it says, "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you." So, some hard words for the rich men. That's what God refers to them here in verse 1. Ye rich men in verse 1. And it took me a little time. I don't know that I have it right, but thinking about this, like, the word brethren shows up 15 times in five chapters in the book of James. Most of the things are written, brethren, 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 do this. So, brothers and sisters in Christ, this is for you. But in this section, he doesn't say brethren, he says, ye rich men, like he's talking to somebody else. And I think, as we're going to see, it kind of flows into next week's, but I think it's for our comfort to, like, almost overhear God saying to the rich men, hey, this is what I think about. This is what I think about what you're doing. So we can almost just stand to the side, and, like, we're going to see a lot of this stuff does apply to us, because we can hear what God's saying to the rich men and be like, "Ooh, I kind of do that," you know, and learn from it. But this is like God's message for those who are prospering and are wicked. And so, verse 1: "Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries." Oh, I'm sorry. I'm missing some blanks already. So point one, the thing that we need to see about the rich men, we want to see their conclusion or their end, like the conclusion of their story. How does it end? So see their conclusion. So he says, "Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you." So this is something that's coming, that shall come upon you. "Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. So here's the first thing that we see that is coming for these wicked rich men. They're crying. That's your next blank. They're crying. And he says, go to now, rich men, weep and howl. So it's not just, you know, shedding a tear, but it's weeping and howling. This is just a very frustrated cry. Remember, we talked a little bit in weeks past, like Mark 4:19 talks about the deceitfulness of riches, how riches have a way of tricking us. They promise things like joy, peace, and satisfaction, but they don't deliver on those. We talk like they're like cotton candy. They look like they're going to fill us, but they don't. They leave us feeling, you know, yucky inside. So I would say it to my kids, I guess. They can't deliver on what they promise. And we all have a God-shaped hole in our life that only a relationship with Him can fill. So like I said, those questions at the beginning, like, why are the wicked prospering and I'm not? And why is everything going wrong for me? Well, David, in Psalm 73, we'll just hit a couple of these verses, but that whole psalm is really cool to read if you're feeling like that. David says in verse 3, for I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. So I looked at the fools that were prospering, and I was envious. I wanted what they had, and it wasn't fair. And he says in verse 12, behold, these are the ungodly who prosper in the world. They increase in riches. And in verse 16, he says, when I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. As I thought about this, this is so unfair that this is how life is going, and it was so painful. And then in verse 17, this is so cool, he says, until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. And he says in verse 18, surely thou didst set them, those wicked, prospering, thou didst set them in slippery places. Thou castest them down to destruction. How are they brought into destruction? As in a moment, they're utterly consumed with terrors. So they might be prospering right now, but they're on slippery ground. It's not going to last long. In Revelation 18:3, we'll have this up here. It's talking about the end of this world and what's going to happen. And the context is Babylon, the city, and the religion that is going to make all the kings of the earth rich. And it says in verse 3, for all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. So everybody's getting rich off of her. And in verse 15, the merchants of these things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off as Babylon's burning. God destroys it. It says, they stand afar off for the fear of her torment, and they're weeping and wailing. So it's all over. And in verse 19, they cast dust on their heads, and they cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea. Now she's desolate. And so it's important to remember the conclusion that it's going to end like that. And then he says, weep and howl for your miseries. So we're going to talk about what their miseries are. What makes this so bitter? And point A, the first thing is that their possessions will corrupt. Their possessions will corrupt. And this is a verse we've gone over before. But Jesus says in Matthew 6, 19, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. And in James 5, verse 2, it says, your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten. That just goes hand in hand with what Jesus is saying here. And keeping with the theme of the letter C here, like, the riches corrupt. The things that, if you look at what we want, like if someone said, you know, you just inherited $20 million, what is the first thing that comes in your mind that you want to go out and buy? Like, I don't know, for me it's, you know, this car that's in my mind, you know, or a house or all those things, right? So the things that money can buy, clothes, cars, your crib, and the commodities that you put in your house, right? So, but he says all those things diminish. Your car, especially in this weather, and the salt, it starts to rust. Boy, that's frustrating when you see rust starting to form. Your clothes, they deteriorate. Your house gets broken into, especially if you live in Dover, around where I do. There's a lot of break-ins lately. And your commodities that are in your house. I guess they're after jewelry and money. But thankfully, I don't think we have to worry about that. We don't have a lot of that sitting around. But so those are the things. And if you have a lot of those things, then you're just nervous trying to hold on to those things. And as they're rusting and deteriorating and being stolen and diminishing in value, that can wear you down. And so the lesson for us, it's on here, is lay up eternal treasures in heaven. So don't put your heart on those things. Lay up treasures in heaven. There's no thieves in heaven. Things don't deteriorate. Our reward is eternal and won't ever pass away. The next thing, the next misery of the rich is that their money will canker. Letter B. It cankers. It says, your gold and silver is cankered, and that means to rust or to devalue or to deteriorate again. And the thing about money is the value is always going down. And it just, like, I think of the example of Judas. We have that here, this here. Matthew 27. So Judas betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And this is so sad, the end of Judas. But he realizes the error of his ways, and he goes to the chief priests and the elders. And in verse 4 he says, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, what is that to us? We don't care. We got what we wanted. You got your money. And so he left, and it says he cast down the pieces of silver. So what he did it for, it meant nothing to him anymore. He threw it on the ground, he ran out, and he hanged himself. And your money will canker, and it's what you have, it's never enough. I find that's true with me. I should be satisfied, but it's never enough. And so here's the lesson for us. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierce themselves through with many sorrows. And Harstein and I are going through the discipleship lesson right now, money and possessions, and that really stood out to me last time. That verse, the love of money is the root of all evil. And you don't have to have a lot of money to love it. There are rich people I know. The man that owns, or used to own, the business that I work at, he is, I don't know how many millions he has, but he is so generous. And I mean, he has a nice car, and I know him that he would let me borrow it if I'd ask him. And so you can have a lot of money and be generous, or you can have a little and hold on to it real tight and love it. And the Bible says that's the root of all evil. And you'll pierce yourself through with many sorrows like Judas did. So the lesson for us is don't love money. You can have it, but don't love it. Set your affection on things above. Part C. The next misery of the rich is that their flesh will be consumed. Psalm 73 is that same psalm we were reading earlier. David says in verse 26, my flesh and my heart faileth. This body is falling apart, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. The older we get, the worse our bodies perform. But God is the strength of my heart and my portion. And Job says in Job 19:25, he says, I know that my Redeemer liveth. And his body was in pretty bad shape, right? He had boils and lost everything. I know my Redeemer liveth, and he shall stand at the latter day on the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God. He wasn't just hoping in this life, but in the next, when he would see God. And I know what we say, like, I didn't think anybody in their flesh would see God. 1 Corinthians 15:50 says, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. But in it, that same passage, he talks about he talks about there's one kind of flesh that's terrestrial and one kind of flesh, one kind of body that's celestial. And so we will leave this flesh behind and the worms will eat it and we'll see God in a new body. And that body will live forever. But if all you have is hope in this life and in this body, I can think of a prominent person in our community that my sister was telling me about him, that most of you would know his name, but he's not a Christian. But all of, he's getting older, and all of his hope is in this life. He's an atheist, and so he tries to stay in the best shape that he possibly can, because that's all he has. And man, that would be depressing to think that this is all there is. And though our flesh is consumed, man, we'll get a new body one day. And so 1 Timothy 4:8, familiar verse, bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable to all things, having the promise of life that now is and of that which is to come. And I'm all for exercise and working out and everything. But just make sure that godliness is a higher priority. I mean, take care of your temple, of the temple of God. But make sure that godliness is your top priority. So, lesson for us, value godliness over physical fitness. If you don't, you'll be depressed as your body wears away. Part D, the next misery, in the next life, their treasures won't carry over. So their treasures won't carry over. He says in verse 3, ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. And we know that these are the last days. And the reason they're called the last days is because the day of the Lord is coming. And these are the last days right before that. And so, if the kingdom of Jesus is soon coming, then how much value is in the things that we have? And we'll see here in 2 Peter chapter 3 what's going to happen to all these things that we have. It's talking about the day of the Lord and people saying, where's the promise of His coming? It's not going to happen. And it says in verse 10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat. I think of like the elements of the periodic table, whether it's diamonds or gold or everything, the dirt of this world, everything is going to melt. With a fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. In verse 11, seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of the Lord. So with that day soon approaching, it puts a totally different value on the kingdom that we're building here, whether it's our house, our car, our possessions, all those things, that puts it into perspective. And I think of, when I think of the world burning up like that, years ago, when I was in high school, my good buddy, he had just gotten saved. We came to a winter retreat. And so I can know the timetable of this, that I was about to go on a double date with him. It was going to be my wife and I and him and another girl. And we were stayed up late the night before, and we were going to make these girls a present. So I made this like stuffed animal thing, and he made a similar one, and it was an ugly thing. But we were really trying to make something nice, and he didn't know much, but somewhere he had heard that, you know, this world's going to burn up. And as we were frustrated trying to make these gifts, he was like, "It's all going to burn. It's all going to burn." He would say that over and over, and so. Whenever I see that thing, I'm like, yeah, it's all going to burn, you know. So you don't have to know much, but it sure gives us perspective when we remember this is all going to burn. And Revelation gives us the end of the story. Revelation 22 talks about the coming, the new heaven and the new earth, and there's going to be no more curse. We're going to see God face to face. There's going to be no night there, no need of a candle or the sun, because the Lord God giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. That kingdom will never end. And again, if you don't have that hope, how depressing is this life? How miserable. But we have that hope. So the lesson for us, remember, it's all going to burn. So therefore, be holy and anticipate the coming of Jesus and His kingdom. And that'll help you to put a different value on the things that you have. Number two, the next thing about these rich men, their riches are gained by cheating. The way that they got them is by cheating people out of them. Verse 4, "Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the Lord of Sabaoth." And so these rich men, they're business owners, they have people working for them, and they owe these people for their work, and they're holding back some of it from them. So the money that they have and they're spending isn't even theirs to spend. They've stolen it. They've cheated their employees out of money. So it's one thing to be wealthy because you worked for it. It's another thing if you haven't, if you've stolen it, if you've gotten it wrongly. They're benefiting from the hard labor of others and not paying them for it. This is a terrible injustice, but God sees it, and He knows it's going on. So speaking of work and getting it unjustly, Proverbs 22, we've got a couple Proverbs here. Proverbs is full of wisdom about how to work. It says, "He that oppresseth the poor," chapter 22, 16, "He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want." In the end of that, it's not going to be good if you oppress the poor to get riches. Proverbs 28:8, "He that by usury and unjust gain increaseth his substance, he shall gather it for him that will pity the poor." So that kind of riches, it's not going to last. By unjust gain. And Proverbs 13:11, "Wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase." God values, you work hard, you earn it, you'll spend it wisely too if you work for it. I can think of money that was given to me that I didn't work for. Boy, I blew that really quick. But when you work for it, you tend to take thought of how you're spending it. So the lesson for us, work hard, work honestly, and work unto the Lord and not unto men. The Bible also talks about that. Man, do your work as unto the Lord. Do it honestly. Don't steal. Work unto the Lord and not unto men. These work. Right? Letter A under that. So their bookkeeping communicates their fraud. Their money speaks. It communicates. Verse 4, "Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth." So that money that you're holding on to, it's crying to God. He can hear the cries of that money that was fraudulently kept. It reminds me of Genesis 4. Remember when Cain killed Abel and God said, "His blood is crying to me from the ground." God's ears can hear those kind of things. He knows when injustice has happened. Leviticus 19:13 speaks of this very thing. It says, "Thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning." So if you owe somebody something, don't hold on to it. Give it to them. And because God says, I can hear the crying of that money. So lesson for us, where and how you spend your money speaks loudly about what's really important to you. Your money is just an indicator of what's important to you. Like when I said, if you found out you inherited $20 million, what's the first thing that came to your mind that you would want to do with that? That shows you what's important to you. And that's convicting to me. I'd
my car is it.
I don't know. Depends. I know. I like Buicks. I know that sounds dumb. Me and Tiger Woods like Buicks. All right. Yeah, just an old man car. That's all. All right. So, next part. Point B. So not only does their money cry out, but their employees complain. Their employees complain of mistreatment. 4B, the second part of verse 4, the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the Lord of Sabbath. Remember when the nation of Israel was captive in Egypt, and God says to Moses, their cries have come up to me, I hear them. So not only does he hear that money speaking, but he hears the cries of those that are oppressed. Deuteronomy 24. Again, this is like the same thing that James is talking about. Thou shalt not oppress a hired servant that is poor or needy. Don't oppress the poor, whether he be of thy brethren or of the strangers that are in thy land. At his day thou shalt give him his hire, neither shall the sun go down upon it, for he is poor and setteth his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee. Don't hold back. We learned that earlier in chapters here. If you have something that somebody else needs, don't hold on to it. That's a sin of omission, failing to give what you ought to. So the next thing, God hears. Matt was saying when he was up here, like, it's awesome that God hears our prayers, right? That God in heaven would hear us. Like Hebrews talks about how we have a great high priest, that we can come right into his presence and he listens. Isaiah 59:1 says, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither is his ear heavy that it cannot hear. God can hear everything. And 1 Peter 3:12, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. That God can see all and he hears all. And that's comforting to know. That God knows what you're going through. And if you're being oppressed, or if you're being cast down, or your life is falling apart, cry out to God and he hears. And the next part that's really comforting, he will avenge. When I was first reading this, I always thought it said the Lord of the Sabbath. That's what I thought it was. And I thought, well, I better look up this word and find out what it means. But I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's Sabaoth. But what it means is it's a name given to God as he is the captain of his army, which could be the nation of Israel, their army, or the host of heaven. A lot of times in the Bible, God is called the Lord of hosts. And he has a heavenly army that he is the captain of. So he's the Lord of Sabaoth. He's the captain of his army. Well, like David, when he came and fought Goliath, remember what he said? He said, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts. So it's not just me with my sling, but God is surrounding me with his heavenly host. You know, you're outnumbered, Goliath. I'm coming in the name of the Lord of hosts. In 2 Kings 6, when Elisha and his servant were surrounded by the enemies, and his servant was freaking out because thought they were going to die, and Elisha was able to remain calm because he could see something that his servant couldn't see, he asked God, he said, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. That's God's heavenly host. That's his army. So God will avenge, right? Romans 12:19, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. So not only does God have an army that he's the captain of, and just was reading in Joshua when before they defeat Jericho, and remember Joshua runs into Jesus with the sword, and he's the captain of the army of God, right? So God has an army, and he will make things right. I will repay, saith the Lord. Vengeance is mine. So, going up to the top part of this, our lesson is, like, those that are around you, they know you well. Your coworkers, they know how you work. They know what's important to you, and they know what you really believe, not just what you say you believe. I know Jeff has talked about that before, but like what you say is one thing, but what you actually live out shows what you really believe. And those who know you best, or those at home, your wife, your kids, they know what's important to you. And because, remember also, man, God will take care of things. He's the captain of his army. And the last part, This is what the rich do. They use their riches for their pleasure. I ran out of C words. They use their riches for their own pleasure. Verses 5 and 6. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye've nourished your hearts as in the day of a day of slaughter. Ye've condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. So, verse 5, you've lived in pleasure on the earth. 2 Corinthians 2 talks about those who don't believe the gospel. One big reason that they don't is because they have pleasure in unrighteousness. And you can say, no, I don't believe that. But a big reason is, if you're honest, is because you're having too much fun living in your own sin. And pleasure in unrighteousness, that's just what the rich of this world do. 2 Timothy 3 says that it's characteristic of the last days that men would be lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. And so part A, they have an unrestrained appetite. That verse says, they've lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. So I looked up wanton, and it means unbridled lust. So unbridled lust. So if your lust is like a horse, like a wild stallion that wants to run, we talked about how the tongue is, you know, needs to be held in check, like a bit in a horse's mouth. Well, this lust of the rich, it's unbridled. You've just taken the bit out of the mouth and let it run wherever it wants to go. It's unrestrained appetite, unbridled lust. So what do we lust for? We talked about this list in weeks past, but there are so many things we can lust for. Trying to fill this need or this hole in our life, whether it's food or strange women. Remember Jesus said, if you look on a woman with lust in your heart, you've committed adultery with her in your heart. And in these days, it's so easy to, whether it's TV, your phone, your internet, to lust, to, you know, on women that aren't your wife. And Jesus says that's adultery. Unbridled lust. Wrong relationships. My neighbor's stuff. Don't covet your neighbor's stuff. Anything that God forbids, the things of this world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, and we lust after the desires of our mind and body, anything that our mind wants, our body to feel good. But that is not to be us, right? That's how the rich of this world live. It says, in wantonness, unbridled lust. But that's not us. We're not our own. We're bought with a price. And our lives, our bodies, our minds, they're not ours. They belong to God. And Revelation 4:11 says, and Lord, you deserve to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. God made everything for his pleasure, and you and I were created for his pleasure too. Not our own. And second part of verse 5, you've nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. And we live in a rural area. Man, I don't know what I'm talking, rural. That's not an easy word to say. But man, we have lots of farming and livestock. And we go to the fair and you see the steer and the pigs and the sheep. And most of them are going to be slaughtered, right? And they spend their lives eating as much as they can to get as big as they can. They don't know what the end is, but we do. We want them to get as big as they can and get their coat shiny and looking great so that they can go to the slaughterhouse. Right? That's at the end. And God says, ye, I know, it's good to eat, right? Good steak. God says, though, to the rich, ye have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. What you're doing is you're eating as much as you can, and you don't know that you're just headed to the slaughter. Jeremiah 12 says this very well. He says, righteous art thou, O Lord, when I plead with thee. Yet let me talk with thee of thy judgments. Wherefore doth the wicked prosper? Like David said, why are the wicked prospering? Wherefore are all they happy that deal very treacherously? Right? And he says, thou hast planted them. So they're like a plant, planted in the ground, sucking the nutrients out. Thou hast planted them. Yea, they have taken root. They grow. They bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their reins. So they may even talk about God. other parts in the Bible, he talks about, you know, their mouth, near in their mouth, but their heart is far from them. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their reins. But thou, O Lord, knowest me. Thou hast seen me and tried my heart toward thee. Pull them out like sheep for the slaughter and prepare them for the day of slaughter. They're saying the same thing. They're growing. They're getting bigger. But it's all for the day of slaughter. And that ought to be a lesson to us. To not fatten ourselves like that with all of our stuff. Because we know that the end is coming. And the last part, what these rich do, they climb by stepping on others. Maybe you see that at where you work or wherever, but the way to the top is by stepping on others. And he says in verse 6, you've condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. And never was this more true than in Jesus' day, what happened to him. He never committed any sin. He was reviled, but he didn't revile again. He was beaten. He was led to the cross like a sheep to the slaughter, but he didn't open his mouth. And the Bible says that the reason that the religious leaders of the day did that was because of envy. He ruined their good thing that they had going. They had everybody's respect. They had their religiousness going. Everything in their life was going right, and then he called them out on it. And for good reason. But they did that to him for envy. And so he was, you know, the ultimate example of this. We'll skip Acts 3 for time's sake, but Peter is saying, you killed the Lord of glory. And ever since then, his disciples have experienced the same thing. Hebrews 11 talks about the followers, you know, of Christ and how they're imprisoned and mocked and scourged and stoned and sawn asunder and slain with the sword. So persecuted and mistreated. Not only persecuted, but the world has learned that you can get ahead by mistreating Christians because they'll take it patiently. And I have a buddy, and he... I'm not going to go there. So 1 Peter 2:20 says that if we're mistreated as Christians, we're to take it patiently. And if we do, that God is glorified, right? So the world has learned that. You can step on Christians especially, and they'll just take it patiently. You know, if you take their coat, they'll give you, you know, their cloak too. And if you ask them to go 1 mile, they'll go 2 miles. And that's what we ought to do. But that's how some get ahead. But God sees it. And God will make it right in the end. So when it comes to the way we get ahead, what we do with our appetite, just some questions to finish with. Do you consume more than you give to others? Are you a taker? Do you feel like in a deal, like you always get the better end of the deal? Like you kind of, you rip others off and you come away with the good deal? Or when you do business with others, do they feel like they got more than they bargained for? Like, do you give more than what others expect? So do you use others to get ahead, or do you see you know, the needs of others as an opportunity to serve? And the lesson for us is we've been blessed to be a blessing to others. The reason God has given you what He's given you is to give to others. Not for your own pleasure, remember Revelation 4:11, but for God's pleasure. So blessed to be a blessing to others, and everything's for God's pleasure and not our own. So I hope, and as we see the end, the conclusion of the story for the rich that are prospering now, and we shouldn't glory in that, but learn from it, that the world's going to burn. It is. And as that day approaches, the stuff that I'm holding on to so tightly, all of a sudden it has a lot less value to me. And I learned to lay up my treasure in heaven, things that are eternal and uncorruptible. Let's pray, and we'll have a little time at our table.